All right, good morning, everyone. Today's daf is daf chaf vav. I haven't been doing much in terms of making up ground. I apologize about that. But nevertheless, though, hopefully we're getting some understanding of the seventh perek of Erechim. Okay, a little bit difficult, a little bit tough, in that a lot of it is halacha that hopefully we'll get to see over the course of our lifetimes, but not yet. Okay, a lot of it's based on the Parsha of Bechukos. I told you yesterday you have to know Parshas Bahar, you also have to know Parshas Bechukos, right? Bahar Bechukos, the final two Parshas of Sefer Vayikra, is where all the basic information is at in terms of the selling of property and the consecration of properties. We are going to be speaking about, primarily in the seventh Perek of Erechin, the consecration of properties, meaning a person wants to be Makdish, he wants to sanctify his property. He can sanctify other things to the Beis HaMikdash as well, but we're speaking specifically about property. Now, what did we learn yesterday? We learned yesterday that a person's makdish is property, so he has a point of geula. He can redeem his property. Tu bishvat. Yes. Okay. Before we go any further, the learning we do this morning should be for a refuah shlema for Sarah Zlata Bas Guta. Okay, so you have to know Perek Chav Hey, which is Parshas Bahar. You have to know Perek Chav Zayin, which is what we're speaking about today. Okay, the basic rules as we learned yesterday go as follows: your makdish, a piece of property, your own property, obviously. Stei achuza. Now I told you we could be talking about two things: stei achuza, stei mikna. Right now, for the purposes of this discussion, let's assume that we're just talking about stei achuza. It's an ancestral field. It was a field that you inherited from your father, who in turn inherited from his father. Okay, it's a field of the family. And you're makdish that field and you sanctify that field. So you have now an opportunity to buy it back, to redeem it from the Beis HaMikdash. So how do you redeem it from the Beis HaMikdash? So the Torah says fixed value. That here we do not look at the actual appraisal of the field. We do not care in this regard for what the field is actually worth. But rather what we do is we're going to assign it a value of 50 shkalim for every core. Later on this morning, we're going to be even more specific about how we measure, how we survey the land, right? Today, we'll do a lot of accounting today, and we'll do a little bit of surveying today. So for all you engineers out there, not me, but for all you engineers out there, we'll talk a little bit about surveying as well. What we do now is we set it at that value. Now, when we say that value, what does that mean? 50 shkalim for every core. So core is an area of land, actually. We'll talk more about it later this morning. Core is a volume. It actually talks about a volume of seeds. Okay, but let's keep everything simple. Core is an area of land, and 50 shkalim for every core. Now, you have to know one thing more than that, which is it's prorated, meaning that value of 50 shkalim for every core is only if you are going to be redeeming it at year one, meaning the year after Yovel, you sanctify your land. That's now, we'll call together year one, which means that there are 49 years to go until we get to the next Yovel, right? Or 50 years, right? Depending on who you count like. But nevertheless, there are going to be, right, the most number of years till the next Yovel. Let's say it like that. So the Torah says there you're going to have to redeem it at 50 shkalim. Now, what if you are makdish? What if you sanctify the land? Or better, I should say better, what if you're coming to redeem the land? Anytime after that, you prorate, meaning 50 shkalim for the 49 years. So 50 shkalim for the 49 years. So you're going to take 50 and you're going to divide it by 49. I understand that doesn't come out to a whole number, but it's very simple, meaning because there are 48 pundayon in every shekel. So if you're prorating, it's going to be redeemed at a rate of one shekel plus one pundayon for every year in which there's remaining until the Yovel year. Okay? And that is the redemption of a consecrated field, and that's if you're coming to redeem it. Now, there is going to be a difference between the owner redeeming it plus versus somebody else redeeming it. We'll talk about that later this morning. Okay? That's how we opened up the seventh parak of Erechin. And then we got to Rav and Shmuel, and Rav and Shmuel have a very basic debate. And that is, now before I get to their basic debate, one other thing I'd like to summarize before we go further, and that is the following. This prorated rate of 1 shekel and 1 pundayon for every year remaining until Yovel is only if you have minimum 2 years till Yovel. Meaning if you have 20, 30, 10, 15, any number greater than 2 years till Yovel, so you're going to redeem it at this prorated rate. What if there are less than 2 years remaining till Yovel? You no longer get Giraon. You no longer get any type of prorated rate, but rather you're going to pay the full 50 shkalim. So obviously it serves as a windfall to the Kohanim, who are now going to the Beis HaMikdash, who are now going to get 50 shkalim, even though there's only a year and a half, 1 year until the Yovel.
So 20 years away,
and you're redeeming it, at 20 shkalim and 20 pundayon. 15 shkalim and 15 pundayon. It's very simple. And that, the pundayon is just a fraction.
Right. No, so 20 years from, and then 10 years from it, and then 3 years
not,
from it.
Not from, three. Not from, till.
Till.
Right,
no,
meaning,
right, that's what I mean.
Okay,
three
fine.
3 years away from, 3 years to, 3 years to go.
Right.
You only pay three?
I only pay three shkalim.
And that's then 2 years.
And then 2 years. Well, if it's 2 full years, meaning as long as there's shanim, so then there's giraon. But once there's no longer shanim, meaning anything less than
a year and a half
now. Now, what you could have done is by year and a half, you could have rounded up to two. What we'll learn this morning is no, they're not going to let you do that.
Right.
They can't, they will not say to you,
they
oh, let's
go all the way to 50.
Right. In other words, obviously, because for them, once it's less than two, so for them, obviously, rounding up would hurt them. Right, so therefore they use the months in their favor. Okay, months will be used. In other words, we're never going to be at a perfect how many years away we are from Yovel. It's going to be years and a couple months, or a year and more than a couple months. Months will always be used in their favor. Right, as a general rule, we'll see this time and again. Yad hektish al ha'aliona. They get to choose whether or not months are going to be used. They'll always use it for them. Depends on what the scenario is. So
because
let's say
that switches around because at 3 years away, they want to take the months away, so they get one more shekel.
Correct.
But then when you get
correct,
the
but
other
once
way,
but once you're once you're below 2 years,
right.
Perfect.
Then they add it.
Perfect. Okay. Good. Yes.
If the owner's redeeming, he's adding chumash as well.
And right, the owner's redeeming. We'll talk about that later this morning. The difference between the owner redeeming versus somebody else redeeming. Okay. That is, so far, just the basics, what we saw yesterday. Plus, machlokas between Rav and Shmuel, basic machlokas between Rav and Shmuel, which is the following. What about the Yovel year itself? The Yovel year itself, meaning we've been discussing that I'm sanctifying and redeeming a land anytime from the year after Yovel until the year right before Yovel. But what about the Yovel year itself? So, major machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Rav is of the opinion that if I makdish a land during the Yovel year, and now, first of all, says Rav, it's kadosh. It's sanctified. Number two, says Rav, you want to redeem it? You pay 50 shkalim. Okay? So obviously that represents a major windfall to the Beis HaMikdash, as they're not even going to have the land for any amount of time, and meanwhile they get 50 shkalim. Okay? So, but Rav basically says you count the Yovel year as one of the years in which you can sanctify and redeem a land. Shmuel says no. And Shmuel's argument is such a simple argument. Yovel, in the Yovel year, the land goes back to the original owner. Right? That, in other words, there's a starting point where the Yovel year, the land returns. So if that's true, how can you be makdish a land in a year where if the land was already mekudash, it's going to go back to the original owner? So in other words, according to Shmuel, the kedusha just simply doesn't take. It doesn't take.
Meaning
that your act of hektesh is a non-act, meaning that you don't have to redeem it. There's no money to redeem it with.
So that means the property stays with the hektesh, or does it stay with the property?
No, it's the owner. His act, even though he attempted to be makdish the property, it's eino makudash.
He did absolutely nothing.
Okay. Now, yesterday we ended off on a very technical note, which is, we know that 1 shekel plus 1 pundayon is always going to be the rate, the prorated rate. So what the Gemara did yesterday, it's a very technical point, is according to Rav and according to Shmuel, how do you arrive at that number? It's a technical point. It's not such a difficult point, if I could just summarize it. It's very simple. We know that we have a machlokus between Rebbe and the Chachamim in terms of whether Yovel is a 50-year cycle or a 49-year cycle. So what the Gemara concluded yesterday is that if you're Rav, not Rebbe and the versus the Chachamim, was Rebbe Yehuda versus the Chachamim. So the Gemara says is that if you think about it, when you have Rav's position, so Rav is going to be aligned like Rebbe Yehuda. Why? Because Rav says that 50th year, the land can be Mekudash. So therefore, what kind of schedule are we looking at over here? Meaning, let me say that a little bit better. How many years eligibility can I have in order to be Makdish the land? According to Rav, every single year, including the Yovel year. Okay, including the Yovel year. So now, how do I ever get to the rate of one shekel and one pundayon for every year? If we're talking about a 50-year cycle, 50 divided by 50 is 1. So the Gemara says is that what we're going to do is we're going to take Rav's position and align it with Rebbe Yehuda, which is that it's not a 50-year cycle, it's a 49-year cycle. Okay. And then what we're going to do is we're going to take Shmuel's position, because Shmuel said the 50th year is not a year which you can be Makdish the year, which means that according to Shmuel, you're only the Makdish the years 1 through 49. Okay. The Yovel year does not count. So Shmuel's going to go like who? Like whom? So Shmuel's going to go like the Chachamim. So that way, you'll have 49 years to be divided by 50. Okay, that's what we did yesterday, and now we continue. We're on the very bottom of Chavdal Amud Beis. Tashma, the Gemara says, come in here.
49 years divided by 50?
I meant, 49 years, right. 49 years divided by 50, correct. So that means that every year now is going to be a shekel plus a little bit more. That little bit more is called the pundayon. Okay.
50 divided by 49.
It's four, right?
50 divided by 49.
50 divided by 49 would be a number.
One and something, not 49 divided by 50.
One plus.
50 divided by 49. Oh, I'm sorry, 50 shkalim. I'm sorry, you're right. You're right. Okay, you're right. Okay, very good. Tashma, the Gemara says, come in here. Bottom of Chavdalam and Beis. Tashma v'lo golin achar hayav v'pochus mishana. Okay? Look at our Mishnah again. Look at, there's one line in the Mishnah, which is that, first line of the Mishnah. I mean, not the first words of the Mishnah, but lo golin achar hayav v'pochus mishana. You did not redeem any land after Yavol less than 1 year. Somewhat cryptic, but works out, that line of Mishnah works out beautifully for Shmuel. So Bishlama l'Shmuel lo gal l'nacha Yovel pachas mishana. You understand it, because according to Shmuel, the Yovel year is just out of contention. There is no sanctification nor redemption during the Yovel year, because in other words, in the whatever it is, 50-year cycle, 49-year cycle, in the full cycle of Yovel, the land is subject to being sanctified and redeemed for every year but the Yovel year. So, according to Shmuel, I understand. There's a year out of the discussion. But according to Rav, what does that mean? Because remember, according to Rav, every year of the Yovel cycle is subject to Hekdesh and Geula. You could sanctify and redeem a field for any single year, including, according to Rav, the Yovel year. So what does the Mishnah mean when the Mishnah says, Acher Yovel Shana? Why do we have to discount the Yovel year? Okay, fair question. So Mitzvah Acher Yovel Ma Mishmai Acher Yovel Be'emtze Yovel. So the Gemara says, when you read the Mishnah, try reading the Mishnah like this. When it says Acher Yovel, you assumed it was the year immediately after Yovel. No. What the Mishnah means is any of the middle years, meaning from Yovel to Yovel, any of the middle years, the Kolkama Dolamayale Shana Lo Migrale. And basically what the Mishnah means to say is like this. Let's say the year is not concluded. Okay? We're 30 years away from Yovel. But you know what? We're not exactly 30 years away from Yovel. We're 30 years plus 3 months away from Yovel. Okay? And I'm not just the land. So now I want to redeem. Okay? Now I'll say to the Gizbar, look. We only have 30 years till Yovel. So let me redeem it at a rate of 30 shkalim and 30 pundayon. And he'll say to me, no, we're not 30 years away from Yovel. We're 30 years and 3 months away. Those 3 months, you can't just simply ignore them. So you know what? We're going to round up. We're 31 years away from Yovel. Okay? That's what the Mishnah means. Kol kama d'lomay leishana, as long as the year is not completed, lo migrale. That year cannot be deducted. Good. My kamash malan. So the Gemara says, that's a wonderful pshat in the Mishnah, but I don't know if that's correct, because if you read on in the Mishnah makes exactly that point. So, my kamashmalan, dein mechashon chadashim ima hektish, ha behejikitani, dein mechashon chadashim ima hektish. Meaning, all you need to do is just read on the Mishnah, and the Mishnah says exactly that. So, matam kamar. So, the Gemara says, these two lines of Mishnah are to be read in conjunction with one another. Lo gol and la'achi yov apachos mishana, mishum dein mechashon chadashim ima hektish. Good. So what you thought was the pshat in the Mishnah is that the Mishnah was making two separate points. So according to Rav, not correct. The Mishnah is actually making one point, which is that we always, if there are months left, we don't ignore the months, but we're going to round up in favor of Hekdesh.
Even less than 5 months?
Even, yeah, meaning correct. Even though it's correct, even though it's a big Kiddush, but even though it's not the majority of the year, but we're going to round up. We are going to quote a brisa. I'm Now, we're going to prorate. You can make a very simple argument. Look, if we're prorating, meaning prorating is basically prorating, meaning let's figure out how much I'm paying per year. As long as we could do the math for per year, we can also do the math for per month, meaning we'll just simply say there are 30 years remaining and 3 months. Well, I know it's one shekel, one pun dayan for every year. So you know what? We'll take a year and we'll further prorate. If it's one shekel, one pun dayan per year, so every month is going to be a 12th of that. Okay. You could have done the calculations that way. That's what the pasuk's coming to teach us. Al pi hashanim hanosaros. No. The smallest unit we're going to use to prorate is a unit of a year. Shanim atamechash v'yatamechashiv chadashim. And in addition to that, minayin shimata rotza la'asos chadashim l'shana oseh. So the Gemara, oh, I'm sorry. Before we move on to the next point. And since we're only going to speak in terms of years, so once I have part of a year remaining, that's a whole year. That will be considered an entire year. And so therefore, the Gizbar can look at that fraction of a year, 3 months left of the year, and say, look, this is a full year as well, and you're going to have to be, you're going to have to pay for this year as well.
They don't round up.
Okay, now, let's move on to the next point. Let's say it would be in the interest of Beis Din to ignore those extra months. For example, Gemara is now next point. Minayin, she'ima tarotza lasos chadashim l'shana oseh. Maybe they would like to basically say, you know what, 3 months, and hey chidami, what would be an example that could go into ekta shepa pagodar ban vitamne? Let's say that they were makdish the piece of property halfway through the 48th year. Okay. And essentially now halfway through the 48th year, so if we're rounding up, so that means now that there are 2 years remaining till Yovel. Okay, so you'll say to the Gizbar, perfect. Two shkalim, tum pun dayon, right? And the Gizbar will just say, no, not correct. There aren't 2 years remaining until Yovel. There's less than 2 years remaining, right? And he's right, there is less than 2 years. Now, had this been an earlier time before Yovel, he would have rounded up. But how do we know that if he would like, he doesn't have to round up? Talmud Lomar v'chishev lo ha-kohen. The Kohen does an accounting. In other words, basically, and I know it's going to sound a little bit funny, but the Torah instructs the Kohen, you be an accountant. Meaning, if it benefits the Gizbar to not round up, but basically say, look, it's not 2 years. So therefore, it's the Gizbar's responsibility to do the accounting to the best interest of the Beit HaMikdash. And as we learned yesterday's daf, I reviewed already this morning, with the group, that If it's less than 2 years, there's no giron, there's no prorating. And in order to redeem the land, you're going to have to redeem it at 50 shkalim for the entire property.
What does it mean,
the palga? Halfway through the 48th year. Palga means half, arbaim vitamnate, 48. Oh. Halfway through the 48th year. Hamakdish shadeo b'shas hayovel. Okay, shas hayovel over here means when yovel applies. Okay? I didn't mention this yesterday. A bigger point, which will come up later on. When does Yovel apply? So the answer, of course, is we don't have Yovel, meaning we're without Yovel. You need the majority of the Jewish people represented by all 12 tribes to be living in Israel in order for Yovel to apply. Okay. Right? Remember, we had that discussion beginning of Erechin, towards the beginning of Erechin, where there was a stage where Yirmiyahu brought back the 10 lost tribes. Okay. So, but if you sanctify a field during Yovel years, meaning when we when we're holding by Yovel, no same bezerach chamisar mechamishim shakol kesef. So here is the rate. It is a fixed rate, as we discussed earlier in the Masechta, and it is not based on the actual value of the property. 50 shkalim for a core of barley. Hayusham nekama mukim asar tefachim uslaim gavam asar tefachim. Now we get to be surveyors for just a quick moment. What if there is a big ditch in the property, in the land? What if there is a big mound in the land? The ditch is deeper than 10 tefachim. The mound is higher than 10 tefachim. Eina nimdavdim ima. So when you survey property, these ditches, these hills, will not be surveyed together with the property. Pachos mikan and nimdavdim ima. And then the Mishnah seems at this point to make an obvious point, which is, if it's less than 10 tefachim in either direction, it is to be counted with the land.
Just because you can't grow crops?
Yeah. Yes. Essentially, yes. Okay. The Gemara is going to make that point even clearer. If you sanctify the land, okay, 2-3 years before Yovel, so you're going to redeem it back at a rate of one sela. I told you in the Mishnah, sela is shekel, right? The Torah calls it shkalim. In the time of the Mishnah, it's given the name of sela. Sela upundayon l'shana. V'ima amar harin yinos in tvar shana b'shana. Now, what if when you're makdish the field, you say to the base of Mikdash, look, can we make a payment plan? I'd like to pay in installments. I'd like to. Ein shomim lo. So we say to him, oddly enough, no, we don't. That's not how it works. Ela nosin is kulo ke'echad. But rather, what happens is it's paid in full. Echad balam ve'echad kol adam. And now, in terms of redeeming, who can redeem? Anybody. Ma bein balam lechol adam. So what's the difference between the owner versus anybody else? Answer: Ela shabalam nosin chamish. And v'chol adam einosim chamish. Now, when the owner comes to redeem his own property, so he's got to tack on a chamish, which is a fifth, which, as we've gone over many times before, is 25%. It's really a fourth. It's a fifth milabar, which is a fourth milagav. Okay, and if someone else comes to redeem it, he's not going to tack on the fifth. Okay, first and foremost, so you right, a lot of very detailed points coming up in the Gemara right now. So first of all, it has to be now. Let me just quick before we go through the small points. Just a larger point. Kor is a volume of. I'm sorry, it's a measurement of volume. Right. It's a little bit strange because what we're doing is that we're trying to measure a land. How do you measure a land using volume? Right. That's strange, but basically, what the Gemara is doing is that when it looks at land, it always looks at land in terms of what it can harvest, what you can grow on that land. And so the way we measure, we survey a land in terms of its area. Obviously, the Gemara knew about linear measurements, right? The Torah knew about linear measurements. In fact, when the Torah tells us to build the Beit HaMikdash, the Torah speaks in linear measurement. But in terms of a property, the property is really good for its produce, for its yield. And so therefore, whenever the Torah looks at a property, it says, how much can it grow? So if it can grow a core of grain, so that is, the Torah looks at it, even though it's a linear measurement, but it's based on how much it can grow, which obviously turns into a volume. Okay. Kor is 30 sa'ah. Now, I don't know how many people that helped in terms of understanding the volume. Okay? It's a large amount. Well, I'm just talking about the volume measurement. How much it translates into a linear measurement is 75,000 square amas. Okay, that's how much it turns to in terms of linear. But the Gemara over here is just going to now speak more about the volume. So the Gemara says kor zera. So the Torah says it has to be 30 sa'ah of seeds. Of seeds. V'lo kor tfua. Not the full harvest. Meaning when you cut down the field, so what are you going to be getting? You're going to be getting the stalks and the chaff. But that's not what we want. We want just the seeds. Ma'polis yad v'lo ma'polis shvarim. And how are you spreading out those seeds over a land? So it has to be by hand and not by animal. By animal, right, in the good old days, which I bet they do some more modern version of this nowadays, is that they basically put a pouch on the back of the animal, put the bag of seeds in the pouch, put a little hole in that bag, give the animal a quick, swift kick in the... And the animal now and the seeds will be falling over the land. That's not how we want to spread out the seeds in terms of this measurement. We want to do it by hand, which apparently is now going to create a larger land area. Tani Levi, we learned in the Braisa, lo ma'avev, lo meidak. Not thick, not thin, ela beinoni. Okay, a average spreading of the seed. Okay. Yes. Tvua is the whole harvest, meaning including the stalks, including the chaff. The seeds are just, you know, the seeds, the things you'll be planting, which obviously means that we're talking about more seeds, which then would result in more land. Now, Shaya the Gemara here now goes back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that when we survey a property and I'm makdish a field, if the ditch is ten tefachim deep, if the hill is 10 tefachim high, they're not included. So the Gemara asks a simple question. Good. Okay, good. I know they're not included in this survey. But let them at least have Kedusha in of themselves so that when you redeem the ditch or the hill, you'll redeem it. Not at the fixed rate, but at least at a rate of whatever its value is. Now maybe you'll make the argument that this halacha of lands being sanctified and redeeming the lands is only if the land is in total a base core. The Gemara says, but that's not true. V'hatanya sadam atamalam lefishan emar zerachom mesorim b'chamishim shakul kesef. Ein li ela shehiktish ke'inyan hazeh. The Torah sounds, if you read the Torah just literally, it sounds like that this halacha only will be if I am makdish a land that size. Minan l'rabos lesech. What about half that amount? Chatzi lasech. What about a quarter of that amount? Sa'ah, v'tarkav, v'chatzi tarkav. What if it's a sa'ah? What if it's half of that? What if it's a quarter of that? Tamar lamar sadam mikol makom. Size of the field does not matter, meaning chamishim salim for a kor is your rate. And then whatever the size of your field is, if your field is half of that, obviously you'd be paying half the rate. It's just a rate that the Torah gives us. So in other words, back to our question. Why, if there are ditches in the land, I understand that the ditch is not surveyed together with the land, but at least let the ditch become kaddish in of themselves. Well, the ditches are filled with water. And the reason why they're not kaddish is because they cannot be planted. Meaning, right, and somebody said this earlier today, the whole purpose of sanctifying a field is really for its produce that it could yield. If it's land that it does not produce, so therefore it's not even in the Kedusha to begin with. The ditches that we're speaking about are ditches filled with water. In fact, read the Mishnah carefully and you realize that this is absolutely true. Because the Mishnah is talking about ditches in the ground and the Mishnah is also talking about rocks. What's with rocks? You can't plant on rocks. So the reason why rocks are excluded is because they're not plantable areas of land. Same thing is true with ditches, so therefore they must be ditches filled with water. Shema minai, hachi pachos mikan nami. So the Gemara says, okay, but let me ask you this. If it's a rock that's less than 10 tefachim, why is that surveyed with the property? And if it's a ditch less than 10 tefachim deep, Why is that surveyed with the property? Meaning, if the whole issue is, can I plant or can I not plant, so why do we give a height or depth requirement of more than 10 tefachim? So the Gemara says, Hanu nagane de aremikre, shidare de aremikre. Because when you have a small ditch in the land, that is just simply a natural groove in the land. The Gemara says there, it's like the basin of a land, or it is like the spine of the land. Meaning, we understand that land isn't perfect. We understand that in every land there are going to be grooves and there are going to be, you know, a couple rocks. So if it's within 10 tefachim high or 10 tefachim deep, within, so then you just simply say, that's a natural, it's a natural flaw of the land, but that still will be surveyed together with the land. You're always gonna redeem it at this rate, even if the Beis Hamikdash used it for no time. Meaning, as long as there are years remaining, you will be redeeming it at this rate. Im amar harini nosim tana rabbanim inayin shim amar balim harini nosim davar shana b'shana shein shaman lahem. The Gemara now is quoting a brisa. The brisa is explaining the point of the Mishnah that there's no installment plan, meaning that when you redeem the land, it's got to be one lump sum payment based on the prorated rate. Tam lamer v'chishav lo kohen esa kesef. Ache kesef kulo ke'echad. It is kesef. Now kesef means money, not monies. But it means that obviously it doesn't mean one coin, but it means one payment. That when you redeem the land, it's with one payment. So and then oddly enough, the Gemara just reviews that last point of the Mishnah without giving a expansive point on it. Okay. Higdisha Vigaala Eina Yotza Miyada Biyava. Okay, now we get on to interesting halacha. It's a strange halacha. And it basically goes like this. You sanctify, you consecrate your field, an ancestral field. So now, there's a chance that you're going to lose that field forever. Okay? If that field gets to Yovel and you don't redeem that land, so you lose that land. Okay? But, okay, obviously, I mean not obviously, but now that I set it up like that, if you do redeem the land, so good. So when Yovel comes along, so now that land stays with you and your family. Okay? Higdisha v'ga'ala, so if you're makdish the land and you redeem it, and yotze miyada b'yovel, it doesn't leave your hand in Yovel. Meaning it stays with you and your family. Ga'ala b'no, what if your son redeems the land, yotze la'aviv b'yovel, also stays in the family. In this halacha, the son will be a representative of the father. The son is going to be considered dad in this halacha. Son will not be considered an outsider. Okay? But this halacha only works for the son. Gala acher. Oh, echad me'akrovim. What if, let's say, somebody else redeems the land? Or let's even say it's another family member. But another family member who's not your son. Could be your brother. It doesn't matter. In this halacha, your brother is an outsider. And therefore, says the Mishnah, "Vegalam yado, yotze lakonim biyado." And then, even if, says the Mishnah, after the outsider redeems the land, you go to the outsider and you say to the outsider, "I'd like to redeem it from you. I'd like to buy it from you." But once someone else redeems it, that's it. Meaning now, at that point in time, it's triggered so that when Yovel comes along, you will lose the land forever. Understood. And in this halacha of Geula, we're going to make the Mishnah makes a very clear division between son and any other family member. Now, I don't want to get too involved in this point of the Mishnah because what I did is I read the Mishnah Kipshuta, the simple Pshat in the Mishnah, as it has it here in the Gemara. There are other versions of the Mishnah, notably the Rambam's version of the Mishnah, which is that if somebody else redeems it and then you redeem it from that somebody else, you do get to retain it. Okay, and I know that'll just add confusion to the whole discussion, so do me a favor, just ignore the last minute of what I just said. Good. Gala echad min ha-kohanim, v'arei hitachas yadam. Now, before I translate this next line in the Mishnah, okay, let's say you consecrate a land and somebody else ends up redeeming it, okay, or no one redeems it, but let's say someone else redeems it. So now what happens at Yovel, you lose it. The land doesn't come back to you. What happens to that land? It goes to the Kohanim. The Kohanim get that land. Now when I say the Kohanim, so who am I talking about? Meaning any Kohen? So the answer is no. The Kohen family, who happens to be fortunate enough, lucky enough, that they're operating the Mishmar that week in the Beis HaMikdash. So I can imagine that for decades before Yovel, I'm sure the Kohanim are sitting there with a calendar trying to figure out which family is going to end up serving the Mishmar during that Yovel. As now, during that Yovel, any consecrated property that wasn't redeemed or redeemed by an outsider now going to go to the Kohanim, specifically the Mishmar of that Yovel year. You can only imagine.
So it really, then it is the first day of the beginning of the year.
Well, it's Yovel, I told you, that year, Rosh Hashanah has moved to Yom Kippur. So it sounds like all this happens on Yom Kippur. Now, min ha-kohanim harehu tachas, I'm sorry, gal echem en ha-kohanim. The Mishnah here deals with the following case, right? Interesting case. Let's say it's a land that was consecrated, and an outsider redeemed it, and this outsider happens to be a Kohen. Happens to be a Kohen. And so now, Kohanim are smart people. We talked about this in Shkalim. You know, Kohanim sometimes justify and rationalize the halakha to help themselves. And sometimes, the Mishnah says, it's not me reporting, the Mishnah says sometimes they do so, even though when the justification, the rationalization is not really appropriate. Okay? So here would be, I would say, another example of this. And the Kohen makes the following argument. And it's not a terrible argument. The Kohen says, look, I know what's going to happen now in the Yovel year. Meaning it's a consecrated property. The owner didn't redeem it. I redeemed it. Now, who's going to get in Yovel? Oh, the Kohanim. Oh, wait a second. I'm a Kohen. Oh, perfect. So you know what? Come Yovel, I'll keep it. Okay, not a terrible argument. The Mishnah says, but it's not a correct argument. Listen, it's going to the Kohanim, and I'm holding it right now, and I'm a Kohen. Therefore, it should belong to me. But rather, what happens is, it goes to the pool. It goes to the Mishmar of Kohanim, who happened to be working. And if it's not him, that means he's not the beneficiary of this property.
Does he get compensated?
Well, his compensation was he got the land till Yovel.
He was using it.
Yeah.
Is there anything that when someone's trying to redeem the land, that they get the person who donated the land a schus to redeem it?
So, you've read my mind. So funny. I was wondering the same thing. I don't know. I mean, especially considering the fact that if somebody else redeems it, he's going to lose it as an ancestral property. And also, you also want to consider the fact that if the owner redeems it, he's going to be adding a chumash. So for those two very good reasons, I guess, but it's a guess, so I don't know if what I'm saying is correct. I guess that he would have first option in terms of redeeming it. But
I think it comes up in the next
paragraph. I hope it does, because it makes sense. You know, and the last time I learned this was a long time ago. Perfect. That's a Gemara's question. Gemara's going to ask that very question.
Oh.
Good, perfect. Tana Rabbanan. Im lo yigael esasade ba'alem. Okay, what the Gemara is going to do for us is quote a Braisa, right? Tana Rabbanan, quote a Braisa. And the Braisa will basically hold our hand through a pasuk in Chumash. Meaning all these halachas, where are they? So, yesterday I thought Parshas Bahar. So today, I'm wiser and more prepared. Parshas B'chukosai. Okay, the Bahar is talking about the general Shemitah laws and the general sale of properties. B'chukosai, the very next Parsha, deals with consecration of properties. We could start in Pasuk Tet Zayin. Let's run through this quickly. If a person consecrates his own property, so how do you redeem it? Zerah chomer shalrim v'chamishim shekel kasaf. So for every kor, right, what the Torah calls Zerah Chomer Sa'orim, so for every kor, 50 shkalim. Good. Been there, done that. We know that. If from the Yovel year you you sanctify the field. So now, this value of 50 shkalim. But what if now it's not the year after Yovel, but what if it's a later year? Right? The psukim now flow. So basically now what we're going to do is we're going to prorate based on the number of years remaining till the Yovel, and the Redeemer is going to pay based on the prorated rate. Good. The imga ol yigal sasadam makdash oso, the yasav chamishit kesef erkecha alav v'kam lo. Now if the owner is coming to redeem, he's going to add on a fifth. Again, perfect. The im, right here now I'm going to slow down because here's now where we are talking about in our Gemara. The im lo yigal sasadam. And if he doesn't redeem the field, the im, I'm just reading the pasuk first and then I'll read in the Gemara. The im achar sasadam li shacher. And if the land is sold to somebody else, lo yiga el od, it is not to be redeemed anymore. Okay. A lot of people involved in this story, and it's not super clear who are the principals in this pasuk. So the Gemara is going to quote a brisa, which is going to make all this much clearer. Tana Rabbanan. In other words, what the brisa is going to do is very simple. Just give us names. Like, who is the Torah talking about? So, again, we're now on the very top of Chaf Hamad Beis. Im lo yigal sasadeh ba'alim. If he doesn't redeem the land, that's talking about the owner. Meaning the owner consecrated the field, and he didn't redeem it, that's the owner. V'imachar sasadeh, and the land was sold. Well, that's not the owner, because it's not in his possession right now. Where is the land right now? Gizbar. So who is it talking about? The Gizbar. V'imachar sasadeh Gizbar. Li'ish acher, to an outsider. Who's the outsider? So, Lola Ben. Meaning anybody, but obviously him, meaning the one who was consecrating the field, or his son. Son is not considered an outsider. So the Gemara says, well, as long as we're identifying an outsider, maybe the outsider is a non-outsider, maybe the brother. It's funny. Of all the family members, the son, we all intuitively understand, the son is certainly a good substitute for the father, but so is the brother. In fact, everyone in this room can think right now of a scenario where the brother is a substitute, right? And that would be the mitzvah of Yibum, right? So the Gemara says, V'lolach Yeshua, Mer Ish Harei Ach Amor, Hama Ani Mekayim Acher V'lolaben. So Ish means any other person, meaning even the brother. So what do I say when I say the Torah says the word Zachir, meaning not the son? So the Gemara says, but that's an arbitrary assignment. Not arbitrary, but it could have gone either way. Omari, Larabbas is a ben, Ulahotzitzach. Why did you do that? Why is the son considered him, but the brother's considered an outsider? Mar ben Yaben Shekin Kamtachas Aviv, Liyida, Ula Evid Ivri. Two areas in Halacha where the son takes the role of the father. Number one, the mitzvah of Yi'ud. Yi'ud. What's the mitzvah of Yi'ud? So somebody sells you his daughter. I know that's a funny sentence. I'm a Ivriya. Somebody sells you his daughter, so the purpose of the sale is not so that she becomes your servant, but the purpose of the sale is that she really marry into the family. Who is she going to marry? So the Torah says she can either marry the purchaser or son of the purchaser. So there you see one area in Halacha where son takes on the role of the father. Or Eved Ivri. Now, Eved Ivri is a Jewish slave, right? No such thing really as a Jewish slave, but it means basically an indentured servant, meaning someone who has to work for you because of an obligation that he couldn't pay. Now, Eved Ivri is not chattel. It is not passed on from generation to generation. But, if we are still within the 6 years of the Eved Ivri service, and the dad dies, so the son picks up the contract. The son picks up the labor contract of that Eved Ivri. He doesn't inherit the Eved Ivri, but he does retain the 6 year rights of service.
Does the age of the son matter?
I don't know. I simply don't know. Adarabba Marbani Esachshakin Kham Tachas Achiv Liyibum. So the Gemara says, look, good, you showed me two halachas where son replaces the father. But I could show you an area where the brother replaces the principal, and that's in the mitzvah of Yibum. So the Gemara says that, but that's a bad example. Why? Yesh Yibum ela b'makom shein ben, yesh ben ein Yibum. Because think about it. If there's a son in the equation, is there Yibum?
No.
No. Oh. So the brother is only going to be a stand-in only when there's no son. Once there's a son, we look at the brother as a complete outsider. So you see that although the brother does replace a brother replaces his brother, can stand in for his brother, but not when there's a son in question. Okay. No, it just shows you, I understand what you're saying, but the Gemara is just making this argument to show you that the brother is not a stand-in compared to the son. Meaning, we're only choosing one of those two.
In certain cases, yes.
Correct. But in other words, we're putting a pecking order together, right? So the son is higher on the totem pole than the brother is.
He's higher, but then he's replacing.
I understand, but we're... In this halacha, you only get to choose one.
Yeah, but the thing is, if the brother does yibum in court, right?
Understood, but not in this halacha. In this halacha, it only is going to be the son.
That
the Gemara doesn't talk about.
He does yibum, he doesn't inherit everything, including the right to rectesh to...
And the answer is going to be no. I understand what you're asking. It's a reasonable question, but it seems like the answer is no. It seems that in this halacha of redemption of field, it only extends to the son. It seems that way. Now the Gemara just has a very detailed question, which is, you know, when we were trying to compare who's the better stand-in, son or brother, so for the son we had two arguments, for the brother we only had one. So just on simple numbers alone, and we do this many times, just look at the numbers. Two examples for the son, one example for the brother. It's 2 versus 1. Shouldn't that have been the end of the discussion? And the Gemara says, Mishum David Ivri, Mahai Pircha Namihu Danafkalai. The Gemara says, because even the Eved Ivri, the fact that the son is a better stand-in than the father is based on the construction of argument that we just made for Yibam as well. Meaning, it itself is not an independent argument, so it's not really 2 versus 1, it's really ultimately just 1 versus 1. I'm sorry, Klum Yesh Yibam, Elab HaMakom Shein Ben. Fine. By Rabbi Baravu, Bat Ma'u Shetamid Sadeh Le'aviha. Okay, question. What about daughter? Right? Meaning, we know that in this halacha of Geula, son replaces the father. Okay? If the son redeems the field, it stays in the family. What about this? What about if daughter redeems the property? Okay? Kevin Delinyan Yibam Benu Baski Adade Patri Mukme. So the Gemara says, look, in the world of Yibam, son and daughter are equal. Meaning, that if the man dies and doesn't leave a son over, but leaves a daughter over, is there a mitzvah of Yibum?
No.
Answer is no. There is no mitzvah of Yibum. So you see that in the world of Yibum, the daughter basically is going to trump her uncle.
Who are the four daughters?
Irrelevant to this discussion. We're just talking about stand-ins.
Oh, okay.
Who is suitable stand-ins? So you see that the daughter trumps the brother. So the Gemara says, on the other hand, in the world of basic Yerusha law, if you have a son and you have a daughter, does she inherit anything? And the answer is no. She inherits nothing. So in other words, of course it's true that if by herself, meaning with no brothers, she inherits. But vis-a-vis, if there was a son in the discussion, she doesn't inherit. So you see that she is not, right, number one in the stand-in list to replace the father. So Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, let's. You could argue either way. The Gemara says, Tana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel, the Gemara quotes a Braisa, Kol Shu Acher B'Makom Ben, V'Hanami B'Makom Ben Ki Acher Damya. As long as there's a son, if you are second in line behind the son, you're Acher, in this halacha. In this particular halacha, you're Acher. So, if you have a son and a daughter, she stands behind the son. Not only stands behind the son, she gets nothing in terms of Yerusha. So therefore, she's considered Acher.
Does the son add a fifth? When the son redeems for her father, does he add a fifth?
Good question.
Holy shoot.
A lot of... Yeah. By Rabbi Zeira, Isha. Mi ma'amid la sada. Okay. Let's say a woman owns property. Absolutely possible. Woman for her own property. is there somebody who could be her stand-in? Now, on one hand, we could say, well, maybe it's a husband because the husband's going to end up inheriting all of her assets. Much like a son inherits the father, a husband inherits the wife. So maybe you could say that that husband could be her stand-in for this halach of gula. Odoma, ben mukim la shekenota barei kebamuchzak. On the other hand, we also know that if she had, let's say, has a son, the son also stands to inherit her, if there's no husband. And not only that, the son's Yerusha of his mother is stronger than a husband's Yerusha of his wife.
Right.
When a husband yarshins his wife, he only gets actual, no receivables. When a son inherits his mother, he gets mochzak and ra'oi. So maybe the son should be the stand-in for the mother, not the husband. Take what the Gemara says, you know what? On this one, we don't know. I'd just like to get to the Mishnah and we'll end. So, question, what if I redeem it less than 2 years away? Now, we already know you have to pay 50 shekels, right? We've already established that. The Gemara's question now, it seems like a klutz kasha, but the Gemara's question now is, maybe that doesn't go back to the owner, that doesn't remain a steachuza, but rather it goes to the kohana. That's a strange question. Meaning, he redeemed it. The owner redeemed it. My daitech, what are you thinking? Vinigra meir kachaviyasa debetesu biyavol debaskiron in debaskiron lo. You think that the returning of the land to the owner is predicated on giraun, on a prorated rate. I only get the land back ancestrally, only if I pay back a prorated rate. But that's not true. Adarabba. It's not predicated on a prorated rate. It's predicated simply on geula. As long as the owner redeems his field, he of course is going to get it and keep it in the family. How do I know? From where do I know that he cannot say? And here in this braisa, he makes the argument even better. Look, it's possible, i.e., if I'm working the mishmar on that particular yovo, I'm going to get someone else's property. So if I own a property, you don't think I get to keep it? So it's only achuza, so only his achuza. This is not his achuza. It leaves his hand and it gets distributed and divided amongst the Kohanim. So again, a reiteration of the point we already made in the Mishnah, that if the Kohen redeems the property, he doesn't get to keep it in the Yovel, but rather it goes to the pool and it's distributed to whatever Mishmar happens to be working in the Beis HaMikdash at that time. Rabbi Chananya ben Akash, Amar Ratzakash Baruch Hu, Zaku Sofi, Chachir, Vim Torah, Mitzvah, Shenem, Anach, Havetz, Masukai, Yadil, Torah, Vyadir.